Well, good morning. I'm not Lisa. Lisa's out of town. This is Marveline. So let me just turn this down. I think this will be okay. Well, let me make a couple of announcements first. As a member of Nazarene Baptist Church, 95 years of celebration this weekend. I just left from there and had breakfast. They got a Bible Bowl competition coming up at 10 o'clock as we speak. Tonight there's a mass concert choir celebration at 7 p.m., so please don't miss it. Not because I'm going to be in the choir, but just please don't miss it. It's about 100 people or more that's come from all over that were members of Nazarene. Maybe some moved out of town. And one of our special people, I have to mention her, is Miss Odie Mae Stewart, that was playing and singing the piano when I was a member at Nazarene when it was on Linwood Avenue. So I just want to give her that recognition. You're welcome to call tomorrow from 7 at 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock services at Nazarene. And then after that, Joshua Academy in the gym at Hararusa, we will have lots of food. So please join us for services in the morning or the celebration tonight. And welcome to what radio we have. You know, our main focus is to talk about the cancer, and that's what I call it in our community, substance abuse disorders, devastating disease, and a major, major problem. We, the Lisa Sipes, Kelly Scroggins, and myself engage in conversations with individuals who strive to stay clean and sober. We also have conversations with people and agencies who treat substance abuse disorders. It is a disease, and there are people that don't quite sometimes understand the disease, and they think it's a choice. But if somebody has a physical impairment, nobody thinks that's a choice if you happen to have diabetes or hypertension. So it's not the same, but it is the same. One's a mental disorder or a substance abuse disorder, and one's a physical disorder. So we need to educate more about substance abuse disorders. I've never heard any person say, when I grow up, I'm going to be a drug addict. Have you? Have you?
No.
Have you?
No.
No, right. So I'm asking our listening audience to ponder this question. What are you willing to do, and what do we need to do in our community to get rid of this cancer that has killed lots of individuals mentally and physically? Do we need more treatment facilities? I think so. We spend a lot of money incarcerating and very little for drug treatment programs. Public education is going down the drain. 80% of the men and women incarcerated are there on drug-related charges, and 40% are usually African Americans. So, without any further ado, I'm going to have our guest introduce themselves, because it's about the new law that just came out about restricting criminal records. But if you go back, in most of the people that are trying to petition the court to get the records restricted or expunged, it's a drug-related case. So this sort of all just blends together. That's why I have these two people here. One person I've known for a very long time, and the other person I met several months ago who knows this law like the back of her hand. So anyway, here we go. Come on, ladies. Introduce yourselves. Who wants to be first?
Hi, this is Catherine Ryback, and I'm an attorney with Indiana Legal Services, where I've practiced since 1979. Mm-hmm. And usually my office doesn't have anything to do with crimes or criminals or anything like that. But in this situation with the expungement law, it is a civil case, and we are permitted to assist people with that. And so I think that's why Marveline invited me here today.
Mm-hmm. Because I knew that you had done some cases before July 1st, when it's restricting criminal records rather than the law changing July 1st to expunging, which is quite a difference. And I think, you know, you and Shonda both can talk about that, especially Shonda, because it's the law is different now.
introduce myself? Mm-hmm. This is Shonda Lynch. I'm a partner with the law firm of Foster, O'Daniel, Hambidge, and Lynch. I'm a criminal defense attorney in Southern Indiana. I've been an attorney since 2000. I was predominantly a prosecutor for a decade, and I've been in private practice since 2010 or 2011.
Okay.
And I'm here today, because I do a lot of the expungement laws. It was a restriction law starting in 2011.
Right.
And it was modified. That law was repealed July 1, and now it's called an expungement law.
And, you know, I guess I'm a little bit, suspicious, curious as to why they got rid of the old one and amended it to expunge, and it's a lot more difficult to get that done. Okay.
I can tell you why. There's a couple of reasons why. When our legislator came up with the idea in 2010 to create these restriction laws, the intention was to help people get jobs, be able to hide their criminal histories from employers, but it would always be visible to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was, as I understand it, the legislators broke up into a couple different groups, and they created their own laws. They wrote their own laws. So that's why we had the dismissal law under 5.1, and then why we had the 3538-8 law. They had the same intention, but they were drafted differently, and they functioned differently. So they sought to amend those laws, creating this new expungement law, and it went from two different one-paragraph statutes to, I think, a 12-page, 10 or 11-section statute. So the intention was to make it clearer and easier, but some other individuals got involved, like the Prosecuting Attorneys Council, coming in to try to protect some of their rights or prosecutors' rights, and I'm not being critical, but They came in and they changed a lot of it. So before the show, we were talking about how the House bill that was drafted for this, it was modified about 12 times before it finally got passed. Mm-hmm. And I think we just got to the point where July 1 was looming and we had to get something before the governor to sign. So it is much different than we had before, although the phrases restriction and expungement really mean the same thing now. This is not a true expungement of a criminal record.
So you can't just burn somebody's record and nobody has access to it, because I thought that was expunging.
Right. That's one of the problems with the statute, because you're using a term and giving it a new legal definition that confuses people. So it's still really a restriction, because it will always be available to law enforcement and like I said, the prosecutors have additional rights now that they didn't have before. Before, they really had no say. If they qualified, it shall be granted. Now they have a basis to object, and they can petition the court to reopen those sealed records or expunged records if they need them in the future.
I think one of the good changes about the law, though, is that under the former law, it basically gave the person who had a prior conviction the right to lie.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people didn't like that. I mean, it basically said once you had had access to those records restricted, you could deny that you had ever had the conviction. What the law does now is it prohibits people from asking. It says all you can ask is whether you have a conviction which has not been expunged.
Right.
So it kind of clears the air in terms of not making people lie to avoid having that discovered.
Prosecutors and judicial officers particularly did enjoy a statute that gave people permission to not be truthful. So,
but on applications, when you make an application for employment, and of course they'll say, have you ever been convicted of a felony or something to that? I think in the old law, I don't know what's, because I have not really reviewed the new one since July 1st. Didn't it say something about they couldn't ask that question? Is that changed where they can ask that question? In the old one, it said if they did, and they could be charged, or even law enforcement for giving out the information, they could be charged with a misdemeanor. I don't know what the new law says. That's why I have you and Catherine here, because I'm not quite sure. And we don't have to answer that question today, but I think that's something people need to know when they go and apply for work, and they've already, maybe had an attorney or filed it. Can you still file them pro se?
You can file them pro se. Everyone is recommending that you don't. That
but if you
don't.
Make a mistake.
If you make a mistake, it can be summarily denied.
And it takes 5 years before you can file it again. Somebody
Three years.
3 years. But the other thing is you could file it and you could get it approved and then realize, oops, I had this other conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And you only get one shot at this in your lifetime.
Oh, that's
so
ridiculous.
So you really want to do it right. And you want to make sure your all your criminal stuff is cleared up.
Right.
Oh, boy.
So in some cases, it could be a very lengthy petition, because part of that, you also have to assert in your verified petition that you've done everything you were supposed to do mm-hmm. in the courts of that case. So mm-hmm. if you came in and you were convicted of 6 criminal matters, but in one of them you'd been revoked and you were discharged mm-hmm. unsatisfactorily, you're probably not going to get your expungement on that matter, but you still have to include it in your petition, and you have to still discuss everything that you've done in that with that case. It is quite convoluted, and I think all the practitioners, we're still trying to feel our way through this. The state has not, they said they're going to create some forms. They have created a couple forms, but not really inclusive of the ones we need, which are the D-felonies and D-felonies reduced to a misdemeanor. We mm-hmm. don't have a sample form for that.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we just have them for the cases that were dismissed or not adjudicated, and people, the higher level, quote-unquote, felonies.
Right, and that's a change in the law, too, is that you can now expunge a higher level of felony. And the funny thing about the statute is there are different timelines for each type of class of crime.
Right.
So you've got the cases that were either dismissed or you weren't convicted or whatever, and that's a year. And then 5 years for
misdemeanors. Or Ds reduced to a misdemeanor.
And then
8 years for the D.
For the D felonies and 10 years for the more serious crimes.
Right.
And then they still exclude certain crimes, and which is one of the things that was interesting to me, was they exclude basically crimes by politicians in the course of their...
Of course.
Yeah.
Which usually politicians take care of themselves.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't anticipate this being a final version of these laws. I think that there will be further modifications probably over the next 5 or 6 years until we get something that everyone can tolerate.
You think it's a positive or a negative?
I think it's a positive.
Okay.
Also, what changed in the last year was our modification statutes, where it used to be very difficult to get a modification from a D felony to an A misdemeanor unless the prosecutor explicitly agreed.
Mm-hmm.
They changed that last year, making it easier to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the whole, the intention is good, and it is good for everyone involved, because it does, to a certain extent, take... If someone can get a job,
right,
they're going to change their whole life.
That's exactly right.
And they're not going to be stigmatized or labeled
as
a felon.
Right. That's right.
That makes a huge difference. The other place I see it, where a lot of people want their gun rights reinstated, that the expungement won't give you that, but modifying from a D to a misdemeanor certainly will.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going hunting with your grandkid is pretty important to people in southern Indiana.
Well, the other thing is the right to vote.
And the right to vote, and the right to travel. A lot of people can't, you know, Canada is not very kind to people with criminal histories, mm-hmm. Americans with criminal histories.
Yeah, right, right. Boy, I tell you, what else is different, Shonda, while we were talking about that, the law that came into effect July 1st? I think I probably better, we're up on a commercial, so I'm going to stop there. And anybody that wants to call in, our listening audience, 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Everything's different about it.
Break?
Yeah, I think so.
I think we might still be on.
We are. My husband is texting me with saying that the mics are open and there's no commercial. Thank you, Chad Schmidt, Evansville SEO.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to give a shout out to employers, because I do think that they have an obligation to change their applications
mm-hmm.
so that what they ask is, have you ever been convicted of a crime which has not been
expunged?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I don't know that... there needs to be a lot more education out there, because I'm not sure that they're aware that they could be subject to criminal liability for asking those questions.
Well, and it looks like you can also be held in contempt, which is kind of interesting, because normally contempt would apply to somebody who's a party to the initial action. And I imagine you would have to provide notice of the expungement if someone tries to discriminate against you based on a crime.
Well, I ran into a similar issue this week, a case that had been not expunged but restricted under the old law. My client did a search of her name on the internet, and up comes the EPD bulletin.
Okay.
Now it's coming on?
I think somebody's calling you.
Okay.
Hello? Well, maybe it's time to take a commercial break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I think someone tried to call in, and we were just going to a commercial break. So if you're still listening, be sure and call us, and we'll try to answer your question or your comment. Let's go back to the new statute, the amendment to the Indiana Code. What are some of the, Chandra and Catherine, what are some of the things that, oh, we got a caller. Morning, caller.
Good morning, Marmalee.
Who's this?
This is Richard Barnes.
Hello, Richard.
Fine. You asked a question about what can we do in our community about reducing the drug situation.
Mm-hmm.
I would like just suggest that we start asking for the narcotics department check on these drug places a little sooner than 6 months to a year, and teach our children before they get in trouble about the effects of drugs, and continue to show like you have in there, being straight up with the people, because the marijuana keeps a guy from getting a job as well as anything else, and more prevention would help. It takes a long time to bust a drug house, and when you do bust a drug house, the people next door, if they feel threatened, they won't tell. There's no witness protection. Being a witness to seeing drugs being distributed or sold in the community. So it makes people fear to even tell.
Well, I think also, Richard, you're an exception to the rule, but the black community and the poor white community, most of the times, they got an attitude about law enforcement anyway, so when they come, they're not going to give them too much information because, then they're being called a snitch. But we got to educate. I think educate is the key to all this. And if we could form a committee of people, a cross-section of people, Shonda, Catherine, somebody from drug court, some of the people from the banks, we need to come together as a community because we have a cancer. I call it a cancer. So what would you recommend?
Well, we could meet with the police department. Chief Bowler's a very good guy to work with.
Oh, I know, yeah.
And start with him. And then there's a problem right now. Some neighbors feel like some mess is going on. It's on the east side. Mm. And they haven't gotten no support yet because the narcotics department said they had to look at a place, have a reason to come. So, the anonymous call, they enforce that, but when you call, sometimes you don't get a quick enough response. So drugs keep being met, and the other things keep filtering in our communities.
Well, and I guess I sort of feel like the meth dealers are also users. And I'm not excusing that because it's a dangerous, dangerous drug because if you got children in the house and they're inhaling all of that, but like we were saying, when you got a record or when you can't get a job, you're going to start to do some illegal stuff sooner or later. And I'm not saying that's what all meth dealers or people that use drugs are doing, but I think education is still the key and more...
Yeah.
Interaction with the police department.
Right.
We got 200 and some
right.
officers on the police department. Only 3 or 4 of them are black.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a problem right there.
Then too, Marmalade, I've seen. I've been in the community for a long time. Sometimes the younger officers have a different attitude than the senior officers,
mm-hmm.
and the approach is different.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to start teaching our children to respect them at an early age, whether they're old or young, and the officers have to respect the community. Same, and not come out in a high key voice. Up there, come down with humbleness when approach situations. In other words, the profiling thing. They treat us all the same sometimes.
Well, Richard, you remember when we had quite a few black officers who walked the beat.
Right.
And we respected them. I mean, there wasn't in no car hid behind some black windows. Because that's what everybody's in a car now. I don't care what color you are as an officer. You don't walk the beat anymore. But there was more respect in the community when we had officers. I can't even name the guys. I mean, they walked the beat. They weren't allowed to have a car. Finally, they did get a car after that lawsuit. But it was just one big family. You didn't do anything or even disrespect those officers.
Right.
Things have changed, and I know that we have to go with the change, but they need to come from behind the desk and come out of their cars and start to talk it to people in the community. We're not going to hurt them. We're not going to do nothing to them.
That's right. When you speak to them, sometimes they don't speak. But the chief, I respect his chief. I met with him a couple of times.
He is working extraordinarily hard at diversifying and
community and the
presence in the community.
Okay, I'm going to let you go. We have talked a long time. Let somebody else talk.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
All right, my friend.
All right. Bye-bye. What'd you just say, Shannon?
Chief Boland and his department, and Eric Williams and his department, they both work extraordinarily hard at seeking diversity in their own ranks, but just outreach in the community and presence in the community. I've worked in three, as an attorney in three different jurisdictions, and they are stellar individuals doing excellent work.
Well, I happen to work for the sheriff. I don't see him that much, but I do know that he's not afraid to come to the black community. He's, he said things are different now when you get detained by a sheriff or a police officer. But he said back in the day when he was in a car, you get out of the car and you talk to him and you didn't just assume they committed a crime. You asked them for their ID and stuff like that. You just didn't. He said it was done so much different now. It's done so much different now. I know from experience that it's done differently now. Just have a conversation with a person first. Now, if somebody's acting outrageous, you got to do what you got to do as an officer. But don't just assume when you detain someone that they're guilty of a crime. So anyway, let's get back to expunging records. I guess I'm a little bit surprised that they're using the word expunge when it's really not.
When it's really not.
It's really not. Because when you expunge somebody's record, you burn them up.
Right.
You get rid of them.
And as a practitioner, and you, Catherine, you probably have experienced this too, you have to educate your client so that they understand exactly what you can accomplish for them. Before the first break, I was talking about one of the issues we had is we got something restricted for a client, and then she Googled her name, and it popped up on the internet. Well, our laws don't, if it's already out there, if there's been a news article, if there's been something put on, the internet, you're not going to be able to get rid of it unless you want to hire someone to undo your presence and the, I don't understand all that.
Can they get rid of it? Could they get rid of it if somebody had the money?
Yeah, you can, as I understand it, you can do things to make your presence less visible on the internet. So you can do things to hide those bad sites that come up.
But what I'm afraid of is that, well, I'm not afraid, mentally, but in about 5 or 10 years, they're going to know every move we make in this country. And I say they, I'm not necessarily talking law enforcement. I'm talking about, all those things we think look like stars up there. Those are not stars. Or the Catherine or Shonda. They were saying that they can trace. I was like watching something on TV the other day. That's why I don't do Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And they said the first thing an employer does is go to Facebook.
Facebook or Google
person,
and see what comes
kind
up.
Of person they're hiring, if they're thinking about hiring them.
See, but in my world, in my criminal defense world, all that technology is a really good thing because prove that someone wasn't somewhere where they were charged with being, or you can, and it helps in family law because you see all the communications.
But it's scary to me, though, Shonda.
Well,
I feel like I don't have any privacy. And you know what? I'm so suspicious that sometimes I look around in my apartment. See, I knew it. My house was built from the ground up, so nobody put any cameras in there.
Here
okay,
we, yeah.
I'll just kind of look and see if I see any dots in the corners, and because
the technology is really quite.
Well, we've entered into a different topic altogether, haven't we? This is interesting.
But anyway, we're going to have a couple of minutes. We're going to take another break. Catherine, I want you to talk about. We worked together for as long as I was there, and it was 29 years when I left. Some of the things that you just don't sit and just do regular cases. You do other stuff with seniors, and you do other stuff with training people and talking about advanced directives, which she's going to be doing, by the way, for us in October, along with some private attorneys and somebody from a funeral home that wants to know about funeral planning. I think we got to take another break. It's 10:30, so we'll be right back, and I'll let Catherine talk a little bit about what she does. She's done some tremendous work in this community, and I just have to give her all the accolades because I worked with her for all those years, and I know what she's done. Be right back. Okay, we're back. I was.
Marlene.
Yeah. Oh, Lisa's side. Where you want, girl?
Well, I'm in Branson, Missouri, and I knew you had some experts on there this morning. And thank you for reminding the community we have to really stay on top of our substance use issues. But I thought I'd call from Branson, and maybe you all have been talking about this already, but I wanted to ask them, when we talk about expungement with substance use, I know there's some new laws as of July where if you're 8 years without reoffending, you can have your substance abuse record expunged. Is that simply for possession? I know it doesn't mean dealing or any violent offenses, but I wanted to ask them, is expungement, is any case in substance abuse possession charges? And also, how they just philosophically as well as legally feel about the way we need to deal with the relapse issue?
Well, I don't think the statute addresses relapse, but are you saying if somebody has been charged with a drug,
I think even the most serious drug offenses can be expunged after 10 years.
After 10 years.
And there's
even dealing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and the tricky part about it, though, is when you get to those most serious offenses, the date that you have to be 10 years out from when you completed your sentence.
And then it's not really expunged, it's just marked as expunged.
Oh, okay.
So it's a quasi-expungement.
Mm-hmm. It's just, Marlene, how do you feel, you know, we're doing a great job in the legal system at addressing substance abuse as a brain disease and understanding that addiction is an illness. How do you think we're doing as a justice system in dealing with relapse as part of this illness?
Can I answer that question, Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
I think how this law and what we've been talking about, if you've been listening, but you should be having fun in Branson, but how I think this statute deals with relapse is that it gives the prosecutor, first of all, there aren't expungements, what we were talking about. They're still just restrictions. They're just sealing the arrest or conviction records. But
okay,
if someone relapses, and let's say we have expunged their criminal history from 20 years ago and they get a new dealing charge, the prosecutor has the ability to petition to reopen those cases so that they could be used for a habitual substance offender or a habitual offender.
Yep.
So, I don't know if that addresses the relapse, but they're not going to be considered a first offender.
Gotcha. What do you two think about the reality that this is an illness that does have relapse, especially with people so young coming in now, that relapse doesn't have to happen, but it could? I mean, people try to quit smoking a million times.
There's no cure. It's a lifetime of recovery. And, you know,
right. So a habitual on somebody's record could be a real... I don't know. I just wondered what you two, I know how Marlene feels about it, but I wondered what you two as lawyers thought and how the system is doing at dealing with relapse and staying focused on this issue as an illness.
Well, I always tell my clients, the justice system is neither swift nor just all the time. And I think we've got, we're all one big part of a puzzle. You know, it's not just the defense bar. It's also the prosecutors. It's also the judges. It's also, you know, the treatment providers. And then kind of out there on its own is the Bureau of Prisons and the Department of Corrections. You know, they don't work as well with us, the collective us. And so was your question, how are we doing? And I mean, I think we're doing the best we can, but we're short on resources. We're short on funding. We're short on programs, particularly, and we've got more people in custody than any other country in the world.
Right, exactly.
So,
I know. Well, thank you for being there and for being part of the collective solution instead of the problem. And Marlene, thanks for bringing on community resources like you do. Love you guys.
Yeah, thank
you. Know, and
Lisa,
she brings, thank you, Lisa.
Lisa,
yes.
Tell Jeff hi and to get off the skateboard.
Can I piggyback onto that comment?
Because have a good day.
Wait a minute, Lisa. Wait,
Lisa, I want to tell you something. I want to comment something else. I know you're on vacation, but you know, I think as far as my role as a criminal defense attorney, you know, we're not. This isn't the movie Chicago where you pay me $5,000 and you walk free and I do a tap dance in my fancy suit, right? Part of my responsibility as a criminal, as a practitioner, and defending people is to identify underlying issues. Mm-hmm. So if I have a client who's been charged with their fifth DUI and they're a habitual traffic violator and they've been to rehab, or they've never been to rehab but been through court-ordered programs, the first thing I'm going to do is talk to my client about what do we need to do to address this and get them the resources, whether it's, you know, locally at Brentwood or Stepping Stones or Southwestern. Because if you don't fix the problem, sure, they might be a great repeat client for the next 20 years, but what am I really holding up to my oath to do no harm?
Oh,
so
I like hearing that. That's good, because you're right. That's the cancer that we have to keep in remission.
So, and they don't always like to hear it from me, but oftentimes
you're
not going to rehab because you're staying out of jail. You're going to rehab because we need to, you're rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And
right.
And we're going to, at least I'm going to put you in a position where you can help yourself.
Well, I think the other thing is that when you're assessing a case to determine whether to file for expungement for somebody, you really want to make sure they're clean. Because the chances are they're going to blow their one chance to wipe their record clean, more or less.
Right.
And then they won't have that chance again.
Which is part of the reason why they build in those parameters. The more serious offense, the longer you have to wait before you can seek to expunge or restrict your record.
Okay.
Anyway, you have fun.
One day at a time, we're all doing the best we can, right?
Well, I think just bring it to the forefront, Lisa, as you did start it 5 or 6 years, 7 years ago, just to educate the community. And the less we talk about something, the more it's going to, you know, occur. And maybe and we need to just start to have some dialogue. That's what I'm glad about the Radio Rehab, that Ed and Regina and everybody that made sure this program has been going for that long. So hopefully one day
focus.
So have a good time, and we will talk to you.
Well, thank you all very much. That was very insightful, and I'll see you, Marbling, when I get back.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye. Catherine, I was just asking you to just tell our listeners what you've been doing that is not directly related to drugs, but you probably helped somebody that had an addiction. Maybe you did or did not know about it, but because of the services that Legal Services offers, I'm sure that you've been able to help a lot of people come from behind.
Well, in a lot of domestic violence situations, mm-hmm. there's a substance abuse issue, and by resolving the issues of the marriage, and sometimes it's both parties, but sometimes just separating them and cleaning up their affairs a little bit will help them make a new start and move away from their habit of substance mm-hmm. abuse. The other thing, of course, is I have done some of those restricted access to criminal records, and they were for people who had drug convictions and had several of them, all like around the same time period, and had managed to move on from that, but it was following them whenever they
went
to try and get a job
or
housing or food stamps
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. So being able to restrict access was helpful.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we do occasionally now bankruptcies, which we didn't do when you were in.
Okay, we've done them now. Great.
And sometimes that can sort of help people who've had a past issue with substances and not been very wise about how they incurred debt.
Mm-hmm.
Gives people a fresh start there.
Okay. You know, I think we need to also talk about, Shonda, the difference when you go to file, can you file it pro se? Pro se means that you don't have to have a lawyer to go and file your petition to get your record expunged. According to what I've learned since the law came into effect in July, it's a little bit more difficult to do it on your own than it was a couple of years ago when it first started, the law restrictions. Because there's been several people I know that, you know, we just tell them where to go online and get the forms, and they was able to do it themselves, but I don't think it's quite that easy. Also, filing fees.
Okay.
Talk about that.
Okay, so to answer your first question, can you do it pro se? Yes. Should you do it pro se? No. And I'm not saying that because we want more business.
Right.
It's just very complicated. And if you do it wrong, it can be summarily denied, and then you have to wait a certain you have a certain amount. I think it's 3 years before you can petition to do it again. The other thing people don't realize, you only get one shot at this in a lifetime, and if you have criminal records in different counties, you have to file all those petitions within a year of each other.
Go
so,
to that particular county, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it in all. In
you
that,
can't
right?
do them all in one county. Yeah. So it's just a lot more complicated. About the filing fees, with the old law, you could have that filing fee waived upon a showing of good cause. Now the statute specifically says if you're filing based on the first section of the statute, meaning you were charged with something and you were arrested but you weren't convicted, that's a separate filing. You can file that in the cause number. You have as many of those in a lifetime that you want. But the criminal convictions, right as it stands right now, you can't waive that filing fee. And depending on the county, it's going to be a different fee. I think here it's $157 in Vancouver County. So that's an additional cost and something that can't be waived. Catherine and I were talking about how we don't really understand that, because in almost every other capacity, you can get a filing fee or a reinstatement fee waived upon a showing of indigency
right,
or
right.
good cause. So
exactly.
That'll probably go by the wayside. But as of right now, no. So it's just, you know, we're practitioners and we make mistakes on these things. You do need help. I will say this. If you can show me good cause, I do give you a break on my fee.
Okay.
I do a certain number pro bono. I'm kind of maxed out already on that this year. But, you know, if you need this and you can't afford it, I'm gonna help you. And I think, you know, the other members of the bar are similarly situated. So
I think we got to take another break, guys. We'll be right back. Hold that thought. We are back, and we've got to cover quite a bit before we go off the air today. The one thing, Catherine, mention the hours that people can call Indiana Legal Services. Don't confuse it with legal aid. Legal aid is located in the Civic Center. Indiana Legal Services is at 2425 Ferris Avenue, right off of Diamond Avenue.
Okay, well, we accept applications over the telephone every Tuesday between 11 and 1 and every Wednesday between 9 and 11. And if you apply for services with our office, you might get placed with one of our attorneys, or you could be referred to the Volunteer Lawyer Program, where a private lawyer will take your case for no charge or for a reduced fee. And so that would be a way to get those expungements done, to get an attorney. If your income is under 125% of poverty or under 200% of poverty, if you have high expenses, that would make it impossible for you to pay an attorney.
And they probably still would have to end up paying that filing fee if you don't, or maybe they maybe have to pay the filing fee.
As of right now, they'll still have to pay that.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the easy way to get it done. If you wanted to dispute the statute on the filing fee, that would make it a much more involved case.
Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Shonda, about something else?
Well, it's probably a topic for another show, just about the fact that these statutes, these new expungement statutes, don't take into consideration that our entire criminal code is changing in 2014.
Okay. Okay.
So we're going to have see some changes on the expungement statutes.
So 2014 might be a new day.
It's never boring in the criminal world.
I know. And you really have to stay up on. How long have you been practicing in Indiana?
I've been licensed in Indiana since 2001.
And so you pretty much know your way around.
I think so.
How can people get in touch with you in case they need to talk with you about expunging?
We're at, Foster Daniel Hambage and Lynch is at the corner of Lynch and Oak Hill Road. Our phone number is 424-8101. We're open 8 to 4:30 every day. If you call after hours or on a Saturday, you're probably going to get me answering the phone, unfortunately for my family. But we're also on the internet at www.foh.law.com, foh.law.com, or if you Google my name or any of my partner's names, our website comes up.
Okay, Shonda Lynch and Catherine Ryback. Catherine, you also do a lot of advance directives, don't you, for people? And advance directives is people that have living wills, power of attorneys, those documents that sometimes we neglect to get taken care of, and then something happens, unfortunately, maybe a death, and you know, somebody's got property, then they got to open an estate and a lot of other things. So just talk a little bit about that before we close out today, about the importance of seniors or people, period. Oh, I think we've got a caller. Caller?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. What's your question or comment?
My name is Eli Jackson. I'm just a guy, you know, I got trouble almost 13 years ago, and I got a B felony, and I was wanting to know how long I have to wait to get my expunged.
When did you complete your sentence, either probation or parole?
I completed my sentence in 2002.
Everything was done in 2002?
Yes.
Then you are eligible now for an expungement.
Expungement?
Mm-hmm. 10 years from date of completion of sentence, but at that level felony, it's not a true expungement.
It's not.
So what you might want to do is... Catherine, what would y'all recommend that he do? Because he probably needs to talk to one or the two or both of you. I don't know.
I'm happy to talk to him if he wants to give me a call at the office.
Okay.
And there are certain crimes that are excluded from expungement, including all the homicides.
Hello?
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. I tell you what. Call Shonda, Ms. Shonda Lynch, who's here.
You have a number for her?
Are you ready?
Yes.
Don't call today because I want to go home and play with my kids. It's
424-8101.
There are certain crimes that are excluded from that, but we'll talk and I'll see if I can't put you in the right direction, okay?
You say 8101?
8101.
And her name is?
Shonda.
S-H-A-U-N-D-A.
Okay, gotcha.
Give her a call on Monday, okay?
All right.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate that, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
I'll see if I can help him.
Okay. Okay. Where were we?
Oh, we were talking about how important it is for people to do their advance directives. And advance directives are just a way for a person to decide how decisions will be made for them if they become unable to make their own decisions. And so if you don't put those in place, you end up with chaos or the pushiest person in your family winning.
Or no decision being made,
or the court coming in and appointing a guardian that maybe you don't like. So if you do a power of attorney and a healthcare representative, you can sort of address all those issues, let people know how you feel about different treatment options, what's important to you in terms of addressing your supporting your family or things like that, and it really can give you some peace of mind about what will happen if I can't make decisions for myself.
Everybody needs at least a simple will, a health care directive, and a power of attorney, durable power of attorney.
I have a situation right now with a senior that has none of those documents, and now she's got dementia real bad, and she can't sign those.
And it doesn't have to be expensive. Please don't use LegalZoom.com or any of those. Don't use those. Find a local practitioner to do it for you, but it doesn't have to be expensive.
And if you qualify for legal services, any legal services, Catherine or somebody on the staff will take care of those documents if you qualify for our services. And that's free because all legal services staff is paid a salary. You know, they're not in private practice. So if they got 50 clients or 10 clients, they're going to get paid the same thing.
Right.
So there's no fee because there are people that simply cannot afford to pay an attorney. But Shonda knows this law like back of her hand. She's been doing it for ever since it came out 2 years ago. So if you've got any questions, just give them your phone number again, Shonda.
It's 424-8101, or we're at www.fohlaw.com.
And Catherine, give us Indiana Legal Services phone number.
The number for Indiana Legal Services is 426-1295 or toll-free 1-800-852-3477.
And Legal Services not only serves clients in Vandenberg County, the branch office here has 8 counties that they cover?
11.
You got 11 now? 11. Oh, my goodness, when I left there, it was 8.
We go up to Vincennes and Martin County and Perry County, and those are kind of the far reaches.
You go as far as Perry County?
We do.
Yeah. And our main office is in Indianapolis. But we cover southern Indiana, don't we, Catherine?
Southwest corner,
Yeah. Very, very good program. I have to say that myself. I guess that's why I stayed there for 29 years, because it was so good to feel good about getting someone income or getting them Medicaid or helping them with they couldn't afford to pay an attorney.
Right.
You know? And no private attorneys was going to take anybody that was trying to get Medicaid, because you don't get,
There's no way to get compensated for it.
Yeah. Let's have some lasting closing comments from both of you right quick. I'm going to give you a couple of minutes apiece, and just tell me what you think we need to do as it relates to the new law, and how can we get the message out there to people? Because most of what I've seen goes right back. If you start seeing a theft or conversion, you dig deeper in that person's history, it's drug-related, most often than not.
It's drug-related or it's mental health-related.
Right,
and those
are
often intertwined as well.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, I agree with you. What we need is more education. We need more programming, quality programming. We need more options for individuals. And people need to not be isolated. Mm-hmm. People are often isolated in their addictions.
Oh, yeah.
And there's not as much as there used to be, but there used to be a stigma, and people didn't want to acknowledge. We've talked about this before on the show that people, we know there's a problem next door, but no one is willing to stand
just
up.
Turn your head.
People just turn their head.
It doesn't exist. Okay. Catherine?
Well, I agree with what Sean has said, that we really need to be reaching children before they get in trouble.
Uh-huh.
Provide them with activities and places to be where they can really, really have a chance to grow and develop self-confidence and goals that don't involve
Right.
Drugs or
which, if I could give a shout-out, I've been off and on this board for a decade. Youth Resources of Southwestern Indiana is a wonderful program. I also sit on the board of the Arts Council because the exposure to arts is aspiring, and it gives people an outlet.
You were there the night that Dungy was here.
That's right.
And I took pictures with him, Tony Dungy. Oh, wow. He is such a pleasant man.
Oh, yeah, he was dynamic.
He's a Christian man, too. But anyway, you've served on that resource board for a very long time.
Off and on. I moved out of town for a while, but, yeah, a long time.
So kind of, what does it do?
They have, are we out of time? They have programming for youth. We do a teen court program as well, but they do teen power, and then they do youth-driven programming where the youth actually have to come up with their ideas for a program, and we find funding for them, and they instigate it.
Okay.
So multifaceted youth involvement.
We are out of time. We're going to do this again in about 6 months to see where we are with this law.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah,
thank you. That's what we'll do. We'll do another. So put it on your calendar for the next in 6 months, we're going to do this again. Because I know there's going to be some new information that we need to know about. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.